C1R.
Number 9B.
So, in the answer to this question, just to take first the big overall view, she first shows at the beginning, all reality is in God and His creation. Therefore, the very opposite, sin, sickness, death are unrealities. Then she goes on through the whole text by showing mostly with the example of Jesus that he proved that statement, that he proved through healing, really, the very fact that sin, sickness, and death are unreal, and ends up again at the end of the answer again with an absolute statement, with a terrific absolute statement, by showing that to infinite spirit there is no matter, there is no sin, disease, and death, there is no matter, all is spirit, divine principle, and its idea. Can you see that here, though the whole text really is on the level of proving the unreality of sin, sickness, and death, the beginning from where she takes the authority is the authority of the absolute level, the absolute statement from where she goes out, then proving the very counterfeit. So when it has been proved completely, then at the end, again, she goes right back to the absolute statement and says, so can you see now that all is spirit, that all is principle and idea, and that that is the only reality? So, interpreting the text, you see, you have to weigh the whole story, not just trying to concentrate on the single sentences and consider those single sentences, but we also must always somehow see what is the beginning, the preposition, the proposition of a theme, how does she develop that theme, what is the outcome, the end, the climax of that theme, how to compare the beginning with the end. That's all text interpretation. And therefore, through those relationships, see again, meaning is relationship, and through those relationships we really get a deeper insight into the story. So, in this way here, Mrs. Eddy presents now practical Christianity through proof, and the main illustration is Jesus. I just read you a few passages out of that text to show that she shows here Christianity in its proof. She said about Jesus here, and you know, if you, again, you see, isn't it interesting? If you read the text from the question 1 up to the question 12, which had only to do really with the Word and the Christ, she hardly touched upon Jesus. But now, when we come to Christianity, we come to the founder of Christianity, to Jesus, who proved the Christ in his daily life, and so more and more she centers now on Jesus as an exemplar for demonstration, how he proved it. So Jesus is here presented as healing the sick and the sinning and destroying the power of death. Can you hear now demonstration on the level of Christian Science that that he introduced the teaching and practice of Christianity, that he established what he said by demonstration, making his acts, his demonstration, of higher importance than his words, see? That he proved what he taught, he proved the divine principle which heals the sick and casts out error to be divine. He gave glorious proofs of that divine principle by destroying all error, evil, disease, and death. Jesus came to destroy sin, sickness, and death. I quote perhaps about 10 passages out of 2 pages that have all the same tone. So it is unmistakable if you read that answer that here she's speaking really about Jesus proving the unreality of sin, sickness and death. Now that's typical, the tone of Christianity as Christianity. Now, it's a long passage, and all what I want to do is to show you, and I think you have it in your epitomes also, on the illustrated material on page 4, that she gives the answer really through 7 steps, through mind up to love. So let's just think about the way she presents it. Therefore, it is a way for us, not only for Jesus, the way for us how we should trace our steps spiritually in order to prove that Christianity. So at the point of mind, the epitome is that sin, sickness and death are not realities. What are they? They are illusions, erring human beliefs. You know that illusions is the counterfeit of mind, that human beliefs is the counterfeit of mind. They only seem to be real. It is a seeming, it's again an illusion, and not really the recognition of the divine mind. So she starts out first by saying, really, well, as God has made all that is made, that he created what he made only good, and he makes all that he made, therefore sin, sickness and death must be unrealities that God didn't make. So they are unrealities, but they are what? She says they only seem to be real to human erring belief. There is therefore the disguise must be taken off. The disguise, you know, the mist, the counterfeit of mind. All inharmony is illusion, the counterfeit of mind again. And they only seem to be real. They are not really real. Really real. So the first point that we have to see about the demonstration of the unreality of sin, sickness and death is that they are illusions, that they are not really mind ideas, that they are not created by God, they are created by beliefs, and therefore are the very opposite of mind. Then she goes on to spirit and shows that Christ's truth disposes of all evil. But Christ's truth disposes. You can see dispose of all evil is the tone of spirit. It's excluded from the realm of spirit. It is separated away from the realm of spirit. It has no place within the onlyness of spirit. It's outside of the realm of spirit. So it disposes of all evil. So she says, the science of mind disposes of all evil. That really Christ came to destroy the belief of sin and to heal sickness and sin. And so on, all about the Christ showing how he could dispose of all evil. To get rid of. See, that's the separation you make. You part with that spirit. So that's the second step. The third step is soul, where we have written sin can be healed through understanding the rules of science. See how logic that is. First she says sin, sickness and death are illusions. All right. Therefore get rid of them, spirit. Separate yourself from it. Dispose of them. But how on earth are you going to dispose of them? We also have to know how. things are made. And so soul says, well, through spiritual understanding and the rules of soul, that's how you can dispose of it. So Jesus did that. And Mrs. Eddy said, Jesus gave the proof of Christianity's truth and love by proving signs, the signs of Christianity, according to Jesus' rule, also through a better understanding of God as divine principle love, which is required. So here you have now the way, the rule, how to dispose of, and says, go back to the spiritual understanding of God through the rules of soul and use those rules of souls. We know those rules as we had them in the Christian Science Practice, in that third part of Christian Science Practice in Soul and Life. That big subtone of soul on the soul and life gave about 30 different rules in healing, how to dispose of evil. Here too it appears again at the same place value of soul, giving the rules. Then he goes on to principle and shows that proving the divine principle of science by demonstration, we overcome really sin, sickness and death. So she says the next step is, after you use your rules and try to get the higher and higher spiritual understanding, then put that into practice, that proof this principle, proof the divine principle of this science by demonstration. You have a tone of principle as proving and demonstrating power. So she speaks here again about Jesus. Actually, most of the whole text is about Jesus as the exemplar of Christianity, that Jesus established what he said by demonstration. You can only demonstrate it through your principle. He made his acts a higher importance than his words. Again, you have a sense of demonstration and not just talking. He proved what he taught. Again, acts, not only talking. He proved the divine principle to be divine. It's an interesting statement. What he actually proved was the divine principle. He didn't prove so much that sins, disease and death are unreal, because that's only the spin-off of the greater proof that he had to give, namely to prove the divine principle. So actually, healing practice is always proving that God is actually mind and spirit and soul and principle and life and truth and love. That's our great proof we give. And the outward manifestation is the spin-off of that great proof that God is only the seven synonymous terms. So he proved that the divine principle of science destroys all error, evil, disease and death. This is what she says, the science of Christianity, the principle of Christianity. Then she goes further to the tone of life, and my summary here is that the science of Christianity, with its marvelous proofs, now in principle you have proved it. Now, this science of Christianity, with its marvelous proof, is still misunderstood. It is as if she would give us some kind of a comfort and say, you know, it isn't so as what she hoped it would be when she discovered Christian Science. She hoped that all the churches will just throw up their hats and say, hey, come along, here we have it. Finally, after 2,000 years, somebody comes and shows us how Jesus did the work. Let's do it because we are Christians, so let's do those works too. And she found that they all turned a deaf ear on her and had to see that not only didn't they listen to her, but misunderstood her. So she said the early Christian era, the truth was not well received, and today of 2,000 years, it's still the same. So even today, this is repeated. The science of Christianity is scoffed at, is scourged. To the ignorant age, science seems to be a mistake. Hence its misinterpretation and its consequent maltreatment. And that Christian marvels are misunderstood and misused by many. I accentuate the mis, because you know, when you know the synonymous terms of life, then you know that all these terms are the counterfeit of the way of life, of that forward-going way of life, that everything that goes against that way of life, therefore, is driving into an opposite direction, is therefore the counterfeit of life. So whenever we go the way of life and make a step further, we meet the opposition that wants to go backward, and that is that miss, that it's a negative prefix. So here, within one short paragraph, you have all those misstatements that this science will be mistaken, misinterpreted, mistreated, misunderstood, misused, scoffed at, scourged, and rejected. You get the sense, really, that whenever we go forward, we meet opposition. That's in the nature of the human mind. It's not in the nature of the divine mind, naturally, because that life as mind has an eternal history and goes forward and forward. But because we are here on the level of Christian science and not of absolute Christian science, she has to show that the healing, healing practice will always be opposed, the spiritual healing practice, because it relies not on the orthodox method of using medicine and does not honor materia medica. It will be rejected, misrepresented. Therefore, it lies, so to say, within the law that we must not expect that if we go one step further that everybody will be happy about it. Just to the contrary, they will find all the lies possible to show that this is wrong, that it's a false teaching, that we are not really living up to the theory of Christian science and things like that. This is natural. This is not an exemption. This is, so to say, the rule that is always used. Until the glorious principle of these marvels will be gained. Then she goes a step further to truth and says, but in spite that humanity or the present age or the ignorant age, which she calls it here, in spite of the ignorant age, truth still remains truth, and therefore it is at the point of truth, the mission of Christ, truth, to destroy sin, sicknesses, death as falsities. So no matter what the world says about the progressive idea and says this is a false doctrine, that it is erroneous doctrines, that doesn't amount to anything. We still have to see we are dealing within the field of truth, and therefore all that is a falsity must be proved to be unreal. So Jesus came to destroy sin, sickness, and death. As the scriptures say, I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. So that what Jesus destroyed was actually not a destruction, but actually a fulfillment. A destruction of error is actually no destruction. That's a very constructive act. So that term destroy must also be seen in a positive way, namely as a constructive act when error is being destroyed. And therefore feel the hallowed influence of truth in the destruction of error. So it's a hallowed influence, not a negative influence, when truth destroys error. truth bears all that is true, that we have to remember. We never have to fear truth. We never have to fear to stand up for truth and be truthful in a spiritual way, because truth will always spare all that which is true. And all the rest we are happy to get rid of. So it is the mission of the Christ to destroy the works of the devil. And she goes on, that truth destroys the falsity of error. Can you see, in that whole tone of truth, it's all about destroying error, destroying what is false, and still go on destroying the false, because this is the most constructive point. It is a hallowed influence of the Christ. So, as if she would say, if you begin at the point of principle to demonstrate your principle, that God is principle, don't be surprised at the point of life that this will be opposed and misunderstood. But if it is misunderstood and opposed, don't give way. We will know that truth is truth and remains truth, and therefore all falsity has to be destroyed. Keep on doing the good work, so to say. Until finally at the end, at the point of love, we come to the epitome that there is no error or matter. All is spirit, divine principle, and its idea. This is reality. Can you hear that this epitome is again on the level of absolute Christian science? It is as if she would have shown that, like in the days of creation, that through a sixfold step we get rid of one error after another, of one false concept after another, until with the sixth error, so to say, all error has passed away, and what is left over? That which has no more error. And that's naturally then the absolute sense. That's love, the climax. So here she says, I think we read it together, because it also helps to point out something. It says on page 475, actually on 474, line 32, where we come to the last tone of love. And I want to read it, because you may not see that this is love, because the synonymous term love is not mentioned at all. She says, light extinguishes the darkness. Well, we still could perhaps feel that has a tone of truth, destroying error, light destroying darkness. Light extinguishes the darkness, and the scriptures declare that there is no night there. So you can see in this very sentence you have the bridge from the tone of truth to the tone of love. As long as you have a distraction of an opposite, it's still truth, because truth destroys error. But the moment the opposite is wiped out, is actually extinguished, then you always have the tone of love, because love knows only its own idea, has no opposite, has no accuser, knows no accuser. So it leads very gently right into the statement that there is no night there, no error there, no sin, disease, and death there. Now, to truth, there is no error. You will feel this is the tone of truth, but it isn't. You see, it's the tone of love, because the tone of truth is that it destroys error. The tone of love is that there is only love and no error. Love is always all-inclusive, which has nothing within itself that is foreign to its nature. So, can you see how you have to read a text tone-wise and not word-wise, not to be mesmerized by capitalized terms and think this is really the big thing in the subject. It isn't. Here you have it in a wonderful way exemplified to truth. There is no, that's love, error, the opposite of truth. Just you could have said to life, there is no death. Would be the same thing, would be love. All is truth. Can you see? All, you have the love sense of the all in all, the all-inclusiveness. All is truth. Again, the tone of love. To infinite spirit, there is no matter. Can you see? Now she takes the synonymous term spirit, for she has taken the synonymous term truth. But she does not explain truth. She does not really explain spirit. She explains there is no other. There is nothing besides it. That's love. There is no, that's love, matter. All, again love, is spirit, divine principle, and its idea. You really get, again, an absolute statement to the question, is there sin, sickness, and death? And she said, no, all God has created only the good. I just want to flow quickly through it, but she says, is there sin, sickness, and death? Her answer is, no, God didn't create it. So if you feel that there is sin, sickness, and death, it is only in your own belief. It's an illusion that you have. And therefore, at the point of spirit, get rid of it as quickly as possible. Dispose of it. How are you going to dispose of it? Through soul. By using spiritual understanding. By using your rules of soul. In that way, you can get rid of it. Now, use those. And that principle, begin to demonstrate and prove it that you really do. Act accordingly and prove it. And if that is not accepted and resisted, this is okay. That has always been that way. That's the tone of life. The forward going step is always opposed, is always persecuted, misrepresented, misunderstood, misinterpreted. That doesn't matter. All what you have to do is, at the point of truth, that you have to see that what is false has to be destroyed. No matter who agrees with it or doesn't agree with it, at the point of truth, you have to see that our devotion must be that sin, sickness, and death has to be destroyed. And if it is destroyed, then you can see that there is nothing else. That's the tone of love. That all is actually spirit and the idea of spirit. There is no sin, sickness, and death. Isn't that a beautiful, logical line of reasoning? Okay.